Kia ora and welcome back to another episode of Build Aotearoa on the Homestyle Green podcast feed. This week I've got an interview that I recorded a couple of weeks ago with Shan Taylor. Shan is an architect based in Queenstown. Her company is Team Green Architects and you can follow her on Instagram at Team Green Architects underscore QT. Just look up for Team Green Architects. I've known Shan for quite a while and she is an experienced passive house designer and she's also put a lot of thought into sustainable building, sustainable design in general. Of course, lives in the beautiful Queenstown but has designed and consulted on buildings around New Zealand and has recently spoken. She was actually on a radio interview when the issue of overheating came up recently. We have had quite a warm summer here in New Zealand, this 2023-24 summer, and this is an issue that's going to get worse because our building code doesn't account for overheating at all. You can build a house here in New Zealand without having to consider the effects of sun as far as overheating is concerned. We're very focused on getting warm with the sun, so you orientating towards the north, having your nice northerly facing windows, but we don't have anything to prevent that from going too far, and particularly westerly windows. And a lot of people don't appreciate the impact of having lots of glass facing the west, causing quite a lot of discomfort because that tends to warm the house up in the warmest part of the day, and you get a lot of that afternoon, evening sun at a lower angle that penetrates into the home and can really cause quite a lot of overheating. And I see this all the time. I take photos of houses that I see with no eaves, very little shading on the outside, sort of square box style with very large windows, floor to ceiling windows in some instances, your big sliding doors, even when there's no balcony. I've got multiple examples of where there's sliding doors and there's no balcony there. There just is another glass balustrade instead of just a window. So we really like views. We put a lot of emphasis on indoor-outdoor flow or living. And these are all desirable features for some of the time, but they cause problems where we don't think about the impact of too much sun and not being able to control the solar heat gain, particularly during summer, coupled with pretty inadequate ventilation requirements in our building code. We're tending towards houses that do overheat, and it's not really a surprise. As I said, there's nothing in the building code that prevents this. And that's the strength of doing things like Homestar, which now require some analysis of the potential risk of a house overheating. And that's using the same methodology that you would expect to find in passive house. Homestar actually takes it a little bit further than the requirements in passive house. Essentially, in passive house, you're allowed to exceed, or your model is allowed to show that the risk of a house being over 25 degrees is allowed to occur for 10% of the total hours in the year. So 10% of the time of the total year, you're allowed to exceed 25 degrees. Now that's actually doesn't sound like a lot, but when you consider that all of that's going to be, or mostly it's going to be in summertime, and it's going to be during the day, that actually can add up to quite a few days of the year and periods of the time when you're at home when it becomes uncomfortably warm. So Homestar, it's actually ratcheted down from that 10% threshold. For a 6 Homestar under version 5, you're not allowed to exceed 25 degrees by any more than 7%, and then it goes down to 5% and 3% for higher ratings. And the point is that we can do this. We have the tools, we have modeling software, which can fairly accurately predict with a combination of factors like glazing specifications and reducing the solar heat gain on glass, adding both horizontal and vertical shading ideally externally, that works a bit better than internal blinds. Reducing the size of the windows is a really big factor. And then, of course, supplementing that with good ventilation, not just relying on passive cross-flow ventilation, which can help if there's a breeze and if that outdoor temperature happens to be cooler than what the desired temperature is not always the case. So there are a number of design methods that you can apply and should be applied to making sure homes are not only warm and dry, comfortable in winter, but they're also comfortable and cool without having to rely too much on air conditioning during the summer. So this issue has come up this summer because we had quite a warm one. It's going to get worse because our summers are getting hotter and we're getting more extreme conditions. So it's something that we can design for and we should be designing for. So Sha knows a bit about this, but I started out by asking her what her favourite building is.
I used to think the Sydney Opera House was my favourite building. So that's what comes to mind. But ironically, I was thinking about that the other day in terms of a building to describe how to do the opposite of a really good form factor.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Not obviously, but it's just such, I just think it's just such an amazing, you know, it's just timeless in that it's so beautiful and it's a piece of art that is a building.
Yeah.
And that's the whole story of how it came about and how, you know, blew the budget.
Completely over budget. Over time.
How many times, yeah. Architect kicked off.
Would never have been built if they'd known how much it was going to cost.
Yeah, exactly. The architect, did he even not see it? I can't even remember. But it was this incredible story. And yet it's changed what you think of when you think of Sydney.
Well, it's an international icon. Yeah, immediate recognition from anywhere in the world. And as you say, a really bad form factor for thermal performance.
Horrendous. I was like, can I actually use that to talk about how bad form factor is? I was like, no, I can't because it's just so beautiful.
Well, I mean, I think that's a really interesting place to start because you're an architect and part of that is beauty and aesthetics and in some instances being iconic and produce something that is a legacy. And I guess that's one of the challenges of being a good architect is doing all of that, providing something for your clients, but also something that works.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true actually, because, like I've been thinking quite a bit recently around how we can, bring back the cost, because cost is such a huge thing at the moment, industry wise, you know, not just around what we do. In terms of the thermal comfort, passive house, et cetera, it's just a massive issue. So we've got all these challenges that we've got to improve buildings for the climate and everything that's going on. And yet we've coupled with this massive issue that buildings cost too much, and not just buildings cost too much, but everything costs too much right now. So we're all experiencing this issue of we've got no money and everything's costing too much money, et cetera. And at the same time, we've got this challenge of we've got to create more sustainable buildings. So how can we do that? So it's been a big thought process of mine and focus in how can we do that in a way that we are bringing back the cost of buildings. And the good thing is that often, you know, if you look at trying to reduce carbon, trying to make a building's operational carbon lower, it is a much, much, in inverted commas, cheaper building because it's a simpler building. Like it's a simpler, you know, form factor. If you keep the form factor really simple, then obviously it's going to be better performing. And also you've got less materials, so there's less carbon in the building. And it's going to cost less because it's not as complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But the downside of that is, are you going to affect the architecture? Like, are you going to make it a really boring building?
Yeah.
So that's the challenge. And there are, I've actually seen a few really interesting people posting about this recently. Like, obviously there's ways around that. And the way, you know, if you create a really simple building envelope, or, you know, rectangular building. Say it's a house and it's just a two-story house, it's just a rectangle on top of each other, and then you do something with the facade to make it more interesting, but it's superficial to the thermal envelope.
Yeah,
that's, I guess, the kind of things we've got to think about. And then it's doing another job, like it's creating shading or something like that. But I think it is our biggest challenge, is just thinking, how can we make these buildings simple so they're ticking all these boxes and it's not then costing more money? Because it's like everything, like if you've got this building that's been designed without thinking about the thermal comfort or the, you know, lowering the carbon in general, and it's just been designed, and then it's like, okay, now let's try and look at making it as thermally efficient as possible, or you know, let's try and make this, reduce its carbon in whatever means. But it's almost too late, because if you've made this building complex and it's got all these different things jutting out and different angles and so on, then you're just, it's like you're fighting against that the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very pleasing to hear you say that as an architect, because I have brought this up with a few people recently, because I've seen a lot of house plans that have far too many corners. And I get the sense that often it's for no practical reason. It's just to make it look more interesting, you know, to give it some sort of appeal. And what you're saying is that you can still achieve a good aesthetic, but start with a simple, and when you're saying simple, we're not saying boring. You're saying simplify the thermal envelope, but then make you can still make the building look interesting.
Yeah. Look, I'm not necessarily going to say it's easy, because it's a different way of thinking about it, and it's being really aware of those things that you could do in a different way, or it's just thinking about that right from the start. It's the basics. It's like, if you can optimize the orientation of that building, because not everyone's blessed with a north facing site. But if you are, then obviously things become much, much easier. It's like being a gifted child. Like, you've just got all this stuff that's there.
It's all going for you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all going. It's like, oh yeah, that's easy. That's easy. But you know, you haven't always got that, but then you optimize what you have got. So you make sure, you know, it's like these overheating challenges we were talking about before. Like, you've got to think about that. And it does all come back to, like, the more energy modeling I do, and that's why I think that's so key. Like, we all need to be energy modeling the buildings, because you just realize very quickly, okay, that's what makes the biggest difference. And this is what we've got to try and achieve with each building. Because otherwise it's going to be harder. You're fighting, you're swimming upstream all the time, and you're, you know, having to do a huge amount of insulation in the walls, which means much thicker walls, and everything just costs more money, because you're fighting against all the stuff that's been handed to you.
So you were on, you've been doing the rounds on News Talk ZB this week, and cited in some articles, coincidentally talking about ventilation and overheating. I was just listening back to your talk, which I thought you handled very well, straight into the question about, oh, so if we all lived in a passive house, then the world would be better. Which I get the sense was a little bit of a challenge, but you basically said yes.
Yeah, that was quite good, because I don't really know Mike Hosking, like, but Mark did, my husband, and he's like, oh, you've got to be prepared. He's going to come in hot on something. So I wasn't ready for that. And then he did, and I thought, hold on a minute. I thought we were talking about overheating here, but yeah, he did sort of come in hot with that, you know. Is it all going to be solved if we all build a passive house? And I was like, well, yeah. Pretty much.
I don't see
that happening anytime soon.
But he also went on to talk about who's responsible, which I think is a good question, because it does highlight some of the issues about what is and is not covered in the building code. And also what's actually going to make a difference. You know, I think there's a limit to market forces with some of these things.
Yeah.
Do you see any other way other than change the building code to start addressing things like overheating?
No, I don't, to be honest. And I just don't think it, like, if you look at what happens, you know, again and again, nothing will change until something is mandated. So it's like plastic bags. Like, you know, we were all using plastic bags, even those of us who were trying not to, but now no one uses plastic bags. They're not allowed to use a plastic bag.
Yep.
And suddenly we all remember our shopping bags.
Yeah.
You know, it's a small thing, but it needs to be, you just need to put those mandates in place. And then, you know, like I was talking about this issue the other day after the interview at my exercise class, and the response was, well, we haven't got the money to do things better. But as soon as you start mandating things, it's like the changes to H1, you know, suddenly the whole industry moves, and suddenly those windows manufacturers that a few months previous were selling windows which were completely inadequate. I remember going to a talk by one of them who was then a few months later sagging off his windows that he was selling a few months previous.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, we all know that they weren't that great, but now he knows and he's able to talk about it because he's got this new product that now everyone has to use.
Yeah. So it's really lifting up that the bottom instead of just inspiring people at the top. You mentioned about cost and previously. When you're talking to people or conversations with potential clients and mentioning the cost of housing, which is often brought up, are people talking about only the cost of building and the cost of construction, or are people also considering the cost of ongoing ownership?
Most of the time it's just the cost of building at the moment, because it's just got so high. So it's difficult because you, and also, you know, you reach a point where with, because I mean, it's hard for me to say, because with what we do as our practice, we have a minimum standard that we wouldn't go below anyway.
Yeah.
And you get, once you've got to that point, you've already knocked so much of that operational cost on the head. So then there's the challenge of how much further you go, because there's a diminishing return on that.
Yeah.
And so you're sort of going for the benefit of the comfort and the, and obviously reduce cost and so on, but then it's how far do you push it beyond that, because the cost of building is just so high. I think there's certain types of building and, you know, buildings that are going to be held by a landlord or whoever for such a much, much longer period of time, where it becomes a complete no-brainer. And that, to me, is frustrating, that those types of buildings are not just, haven't yet caught on to that fact. I think that would be a big shift for us as a country if some of those buildings did have that, you know, were taking that on board and just realizing that actually operational costs are so much lower. I think there was one in the conference the other day. Was it Winthrop building in
the Winthrop Boston? Center? Yeah.
And he was talking about the fact that the you know, the tenants were all, that's what they wanted. That's why they were going to that building. And so many of these international buildings that had gone to this higher standard, tenants or even rents for apartments were able to be marketed much, much higher because people knew what they were getting, which is the opposite to like the apartments in Auckland that have been overheating. That's been what I was talking about in the news this week, because you know, they're built because we've got such a housing shortage, and they're built quickly and cheaply, and there's no thought for thermal comfort, because that becomes the problem of the tenant. And so you've got these mass west-facing windows, and then you've got a bedroom that's 30 degrees at 9 o'clock at night and 24 degrees outside, and they can't cool it because there's one heat pump in the building that's completely inadequate, and the building itself was just not designed with any thermal comfort in mind.
Yeah. I want to come back to just talk about some practical solutions and things that, you know, we should be doing better in that regard. But just staying with the cost for a moment, if the cost of the general cost of construction is really high, can the argument not be made that it's not the high performance bits, the energy efficiency bits that are making it expensive? It's just building cost. So
yes,
adding the bits like higher, better windows, more insulation, air tightness, surely that becomes an even smaller fraction of the whole.
Yes.
Or is that a losing argument when people just want to maximize?
I think you're dead right on that, and that is something I'm aware of too, is that, you know, and it does come back to that, what we were talking about before, like if you've knocked all the stuff that you can have, the, you know, the low hanging fruit that everyone talks about. So you've made your building as simple, the thermal envelope as simple as it can be. You've optimized your orientation, you know, and minimized places where you've got crazy potential for thermal bridging and so on. So you've hit so many things on the head with that. And then you're spending that extra budget on the better windows, like the better thermal construction, et cetera. Then you're still, which is what we aim to do as a company as well, is you're still within that same sort of budget that you're talking about with your contemporaries who are not necessarily doing those things. So their budget's going elsewhere. So whilst the cost of building's all going up, it's still potentially, I haven't actually looked at it, but potentially possibly easier to, you know, hide in inverted commas the cost of what this extra performance does.
Yeah.
Because everything's gone up at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can see the counter argument is which I hear all the time. And my day job is saying, oh, people saying, costs are really high. You know, we're already maxed out our budget. Now you're asking us to add a heat pump or put better windows in. And it's kind of like those things are seen as optional extras over an already expensive building process and procurement of it, all the things you've got to have anyway, like the concrete and the timber and the cladding. And I get, what I'm seeing is that problem is arising, and that's the reality. If you're having to effectively retrofit a design, if you're coming with a plan already, which is a standard plan or something similar to what's been used for the last 10 years, and then saying, okay, well, now we need to make it more efficient, then it's going to be more.
Yeah, it is. It's coming at it too late. Like it's like everything, you've got to rethink the processes. Like one of the things I feel quite passionate about is, and it's taking it back even a step further, because I look at things like subdivisions and think, if we had some sort of rules in place that subdivisions, when they got carved up, were done in such a way that there's a promotion of north-facing elevations. And we did a study on this, and I can't remember the numbers now, but we did it for a talk a couple of years ago. And the amount, we just did it on a subdivision here in Queenstown, and the difference it would have made in carbon, and just building them at code minimum back then, pre-H1 changes to promoting the same buildings, but 90% of them were north facing.
Right.
It was huge. It was like this enormous amount of trees per year in terms of carbon offsets.
Just by having them facing the right way.
Just by facing the right way, taking the same inverted commas, badly constructed buildings and facing them to the north was huge. And then you're going to get all these other benefits. You get much more sun, much more light into the buildings.
Yeah.
You know, better environment.
And it wouldn't even necessarily require producing the optimum layout. It would a first step towards that would be removing some of the barriers that are there or the requirements that are there that I've heard about from urban design panels, which require things like large amounts of glaze, like up to 25% of the area, whichever aspect it is, whichever orientation facing the street, has to be glass. You know, I've heard about that, and that there's a lot of variance among different councils, it seems. So yes, that even makes it hard for designers that they can't. It's not just the building code they have to think about. It's some of these local rules that might be driving perverse outcomes.
Yeah, it's true. We've just had that with a tricky place where we were doing a row of townhouses, which it had a difficult consenting. So to get through, we had to put windows where we don't want them because it's south facing and it's onto the street and it's where we've not got any of the living spaces, but we just had to put them in there for, you know, the perceived, I can't remember what the term is, but it's about, you know, having someone overlooking the street from the house. So it's a safer environment.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I get it. I get it from the urban design perspective. It, you know, it makes sense, but it is against what you're trying to do thermally and even how the people are probably going to live.
Yeah. And it also seems that in some instances, those urban design panels have, quite a large impact. It seems like they have an oversized influence, and often it's the opinions of a few people overriding your energy model, for example.
It's definitely it's one of, you know, especially if you have got a tricky consenting process, you've got to tick all of those boxes or you just won't get it. The thermal side of it they're not interested in, because it's like all these things, you've got to cross those hurdles first. And then you've got consent and then you can, you know, look at the rest.
Yeah. So talking about thermal, I mean, we won't rehash. People can go and have a look at the article. I thought it was quite a good article raising some of the issues. We have had H1 updates. So we're pretty good, I think, now on dealing with winter. We know how to keep the heat in, but that's also becoming part of the problem. So what is the scale of that problem that you're seeing of summertime comfort, and how do we fix it?
Yeah, look, I don't know what the scale is. It's been really interesting following the news about all of this week, and it's highlighted it for me. And I'm not really surprised, because as soon as, you know, we started doing what we were doing, which is now sort of 11, 12 years ago, we realized very quickly that keeping a building warm was pretty easy once you, you know, do all the things that you should be doing, but keeping it cool wasn't so easy. So overheating is one of the key things. Like, you've got to, and it's any building, it's not just buildings that are as thermally efficient as passive house buildings. It's any building has got the potential to overheat and be incredibly uncomfortable. So for example, my in-laws' house, which has got this huge west-facing facade, and this time of year when the sun's coming in and it's much, much lower but still really hot, they've got the blinds, internal blinds down from about 4 or 5 o'clock onwards. And it's this amazing view that they're just not looking at. And it's huge. So it comes back to the energy modeling. Like, if we're energy bonding and that became mandatory and people understood, and again, became part of the code, you've got to think about overheating, not just the thermal warmth in the winter. Then, you know, because I don't know if you heard me say on the interview the other day, because I got that from the conference, that someone said that 50% of, they predicted that 50% of greenhouse gases by 2050 are going to be due to cooling of buildings.
Yeah, I did pick that up, and I know there are places in Australia already that the summer demand is already overtaking the winter demand in traditionally heating climate zones, heating dominant climate zones. So it's starting to shift, partly because of behaviour and the prevalence of heat pumps, which people are using as air conditioners. So you've given them the ability to mechanically cool, and they're making use of that. So the summer energy use is starting to creep up. Whereas before they would have just had a ceiling fan and dealt with it. I, from a passive house point of view, so there is the option in PHPP, I understand, to account for things like curtains and indoor blinds. You do have some levers that you can pull there, and there is some theoretical impact that that has on solar heat gain.
Yes. Yeah, it's very easy to see, actually. And that's, I suppose that's why I'm getting more and more passionate about the energy modeling, because especially with things like, so what I tend to do is do a very quick design pH model, which is the SketchUp add-on that then you can convert to PHPP, bring it into PHPP because you can't do the overheating stuff in design pH. But you can see very, very quickly what it's doing. And then, you know, just change the windows in terms of shading and just see what do you need. Like, and it just helps you make a decision quite quickly and see which windows are particularly bad and so on.
Yeah.
But it's a tool. It's a just really useful tool.
And what makes the most difference?
It depends on orientation. You know, if you're west facing and even east facing, actually east facing's got quite a lot of heat coming in, then you need to externally do shutters externally or external blinds. But again, like I feel like that's also a no-brainer, because you don't necessarily need the internal blinds. So we're doing that on a few projects, is they're putting the money into the external blinds, which knocks out, you know, up to 80% of the heat coming in, and you don't need internal blinds. You could put like up a nice, you know, curtain in some rooms or something that's more aesthetic. But you're way better off putting your money into those external blinds than putting it into internal blinds.
Right. So 80% in some cases. So basically external blinds are much more effective, because there are inputs in PHPP for internal curtains and blinds. Yeah. And I've seen some studies saying that they do have some impact in reducing internal heat gain.
Yeah, they do. But again, you can end up, depending on your situation, but if you've got, like, if you put black blinds or, you know, grey internal blinds, you can start to trap the heat between, especially if you've got, you know, a low-E coating or something on the glass, because the heat's already come in and then you're trapping it in that zone.
Yeah.
And you're getting a lot of heat off that. So if you're doing internal blinds, obviously you're better off with a lighter colour. But actually, if you do external blinds, you're, according to PHPP, you're better off with a darker colour, which is, I guess, absorbing the heat.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But it's just on the outside. But you get these blinds, which basically, they come down and you can still see through them. So it's been brilliant for the clients we've done them for, because they can pull them down and you can still, obviously, it changes. It's like just having a, you know, a tint on your glass, but it's stopping
all the
heat. Is
that external still? External?
Yeah, externals, yeah.
Right. And do you have ones that they can control from the inside, or do you have to send someone outside?
Yeah, yeah. We're automating them.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
So doing a couple of things like putting on a sensor. So if you're not in the house and it hits a certain temperature, they'll come down. But you can obviously override that. But like, I was in one of the houses, passive house that we did, that's up on just over the hill here on Slope Hill Road. And I was there all day when we were doing the blower door test, and it got quite hot. So put down all the blinds across the big north facing windows, and it was immediate how different it felt. Like, it was, I'm sure some of it's psychological, but you just immediately felt cooler in that room. And you can still see through, you can still see Coronet Peak.
Right. So they're not block out.
No, I mean, you can obviously get blockouts, but we didn't in this house.
Right. Oh, that's good to know. Do you know if there are retrofit options? Because a lot of people will be.
Yeah, you can, but it's just, it's like everything. It's just a bit more of a pain, because it's about getting the electricity to that point.
Right. If you want to do the automated options.
And you really need to have them with, you know, little remote controls to do it.
So control it from the inside.
Yes.
Well, good stuff. Well done this week getting out there, and I mean, it's great that people found you and were able to talk about this stuff in the mainstream. And I think you made some really good points, particularly about the need for rule changes. I haven't surveyed general people not in the industry, but I'm guessing that a lot of people just don't even know that overheating is not mentioned in the New Zealand Building Code.
Yeah.
Which is kind of scary, but actually it's not that unique. There are a lot of building codes around the world that only really focus on keeping warm in winter, but nothing in summer.
But the thing is with that, you've got to think we're here in New Zealand, and you know, I originally come from the UK, and obviously it's going to be a challenge worldwide, but a lot of climates we don't get as much sun as we do here, or as much heat, so it's not as much of a challenge. Or you're not, like, we build much more you know, walls of glass in this country, and someone like the UK, you've almost always got little windows still. So it's a much different architecture, it's a different climate. It's not such a big thing as I think it will be for us here, not just here, Australia, like places where we're building this much more modern architecture everywhere, really. And we're building a lot more. We don't have as much existing stock that is being reused. So it's really important.
Yeah. Good stuff. Where can people find you, Shan?
Good question. Well, at the moment, I'm doing a lot more on Instagram, which
I noticed that.
Yeah.
Weekly.
I really want to help get out there and educate more. That's a bit of a passion, which I started doing at the end of last year, and doing a bit more consulting rather than just our architecture. So Instagram and LinkedIn and our website. They're probably the main place.
I'll put those up. People should definitely follow you on Instagram.
Awesome.
Thank you very much, Shan. Yeah. Great to chat. We'll catch up again sometime soon.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you.
And that was Shan Taylor of Team Green Architects, based in Queenstown, but also doing work throughout the country. You can find her at teamgreenarchitects.co.nz. And as she said, also very active on Instagram. So I highly recommend following Shan on Instagram. You can find her there, teamgreenarchitects_QT. Love to get your feedback on that. What are your thoughts on overheating? And do you see this becoming a problem? And what are things that you're doing about it, or things that you think we should do about it in our design? I certainly think we need to change the building code to make sure that overheating is addressed in the building code, because that's the only thing that's really going to ultimately require everyone to consider this. And it's not that we can't consider it, it's just that we don't have to, so a lot of people don't. All right, thank you very much for listening in. Please share if you feel like this is something useful, and be really, really great to hear from you. You can always email me, matthew@homestylegreen.com. Thanks very much. I'll be back again next week on the Homestyle Green podcast with another of this series of Build Aotearoa.